back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the summer seasons. Chicken Palooza with my friends at Royal Farms. I'll be on the road doing the Crab Cake Tour beginning week after next. We're going to be doing 30 crab cakes, 30 days for my 30th anniversary to kick off what will be a magical year around here, certainly for the Ravens. Marty Conway joins me now. And Marty, I invited you on to talk soccer. I even wore my my U.S. jersey from back in the 90s. It still fits. I still like it. It's still really nice on a really hot day. The soccer thing's the reason I called you. But right before we got going here, we were green rooming a little bit about what happened in Nats Park the other night. And I only was supposed to go to one baseball game this year. I think I'm going to go see Ohtani play later this month in Baltimore. I almost saw him in New York. I think I might go to a Nationals game in the month for a crab cake. It's a long story. I'll let that cat out of the bag later. But the only game in my calendar that I had that I knew I was going to, my wife's been out of town with her sister for a couple of weeks. The Padres were in town. My dear friend Yulman, who I'm sure you know, Freddie Yulman as well, has been running the Padres forever. And he knows I'm a Padres fan. I have a Tony Gwynn jersey. Saturday night was our night to go to the game. I had two tickets. I was supposed to go with Michelle Jackman, the date with the Jackman daughter that I never had. Phil's daughter was a huge Nationals fan. We were supposed to go. And she called me on Tuesday and she said, Ness, my daughter's getting married. My niece is throwing a bachelorette party. Saturday night's the only night to do it. I can't go to the game. And I thought, well, it's going to be 95. Maybe Marty will go. I'll call Marty, go to the Padres game with me. You know, I didn't think to call you. If it's good, I didn't. Because I didn't call anybody. I just decided I wasn't going to go. I didn't go. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I woke up Saturday night. I watched the beginning of the game. And I woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and Michelle threw me a text and said, did you go to the game? Marty, I'm a baseball fan. You know, the first thing I thought, I missed another no-hitter. This is another no-hitter that I had. No. I got up and I saw the game had been suspended, and then I saw the videos. Marty, if I'd have called you last week, you might have gone to the game with me Saturday night. I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
I mean, that's a hell of a thing that happened there.
Yeah, look, I think it's it was very unfortunate, very scary, very concerning for the people that were in the stadium. I mean, look, we're just getting back to a comfort level, barely getting back, to a comfort level of having not just full capacity, but maybe near full capacity and all that, that we're working through cities and stadiums and all that. And then to have this, you know, shooting an incident outside the stadium immediately. If you've been to Nats Park, you know, along the third baseline, that North Capitol Street or South Capitol Street, whatever it is there, runs there. And when you're walking along the third baseline stadium, you're walking right alongside the road there.
A very busy road.
Very busy road. And to and from, and look, this was fairly pointed out by others, I'll just amplify it, that just across the Douglas Bridge into, Southeast D.C., across the Anacostia, is a very dangerous area. So it's the most dangerous area in D.C. It remains so. So for that to be just on the shoulders of a very dangerous area, and to have that seep over into where not only Nats Park, but Audi Field, where D.C. United plays, just a couple of blocks further southeast, all of a sudden it wakes people up and says, maybe what we've been reading about with a surge in gun violence in cities in Baltimore, Washington has now gone over 100. They haven't gone over 100 fatalities this early in years. Philadelphia is over 300. There's a number of places, Chicago, there's a number of places, not just Baltimore, that are experiencing this. To have it touch the fringes of a sporting event, we all know what happened tragically a few years ago in Las Vegas at the concert. And so dredging up those memories, I know when they surveyed some people the next day, and a lot of media asked them, would this influence your decision to come to a future game? And many people are comfortable coming out and saying, no, I need to live my life, et cetera. But in the back of your mind, safety and security is the number one thing, as we know from Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Well, watching the video, the first video I saw on my phone at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I haven't gone into the rabbit hole to watch every news show, right? Like, or how it's been. And apparently it hasn't been covered as a dramatic thing, as maybe as dramatic as if you were there, it would have been, right? And I, you know, I saw the Machado and Tatis grabbing kids and like, but I saw people running, and I have friends that were there on my timeline that shot videos and different things. And I thought, that's something I never want to experience in my life. You know what I mean? And I woke up a little shook up on Sunday. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I was on the 9/11 flights two Mondays before. I was on the Newark LA flight. So like, that was 2 weeks before 9/11. I was doing it for work, whatever. I'm thinking places I was at the scene. My wife walked into a bank right after a bank robbery. You know, First Mariner was robbed. I mean, I remember that sort of like, ooh, that was a near miss. Marty, I mean, I've been planning for 3 months to go to that game, and I know where Fred Yeoman would have put me in the seats. And I have a feeling, had you been with me, I pictured myself being there for real, because I wouldn't have left that game early. I would have gone down there and made a whole night. It wasn't that kind of an event for me. We would have been sitting there. And I think that's one thing I don't need on my, I don't have that on my bucket list. I don't ever want to experience that. And I think about how close I came to experiencing that.
Yeah. Well, I know in Baltimore, just a few years ago, they had an incident where they kept people inside the stadium. If you remember, an Orioles game,
Freddie Gray weekend. Yeah.
Is that when it was? Because they had some incidents that were outside there. So, look, as I said, it's a particular incident. I think that any replication of this, anything else closely, again, I just think that people don't want to acknowledge this. I know people in leadership don't like to acknowledge it either. But safety and security is the number one thing when people start to look at entertainment, other kinds of choices, et cetera. And so whether you push the security perimeter further out or other kinds of things, I think this is just another thing that ties sort of culturally in sports together.
We can't have it. We can't have one. If one is too many, literally, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so again, I just think it's it's a little bit of a flare going up that I think the sports organizations, as they see themselves as both sports and entertainment, are going to have to make more moves to solidify with people that this perimeter, not just the stadium, but the perimeter is a safe and secure place for your family going to and from. Because if there's any chink in that chain anywhere along the way, and then that's very hard to recover from. So, you know, we hope for the best. But again, I just think it was a bit of a flare going up that right now sports doesn't need as people start to reconvene around sporting events.
Marty Conway is here. He is the good professor, our sports professor of all things business at Georgetown University. Marty, I'm wearing my soccer jersey, and I called you about soccer, not about anything else. And we'll get to NFL and the Ravens and free practice. We can do all that after my anniversary next week during the Crab Cake Tour. I got the invite last week to go to the press conference. I'm not going to like go around the bend about how bad a press conference it was. It was 11:30 on a 98 degree day. They did it outside on carpet. It was a tragic mistake if you really wanted people to be paying attention. I dressed in jeans and red, white, and blue because I thought it was a club level thing. So I literally, to say that everyone there was melting does not do justice to everyone melting. And it really being a circle jerk for politicians to get up and read their speeches. And look, I like Terry. I like what they're doing. I want to believe that we have a chance to do this because there are finalists and we're one of them, right? Like, we have a better chance than Chicago or Minnesota or some of these, because they're not in. And it took me some research to figure it out. It was one of the worst press conferences I've ever attended. For the most important thing that could ever happen here, other than the stadium itself, and you were a part of that with the Orioles and getting the Ravens. And I put it out online over the weekend about how important it would be and what a big deal it would be if we got 5 World Cup games here. Like, I don't think people even understand that. And it's an anti-soccer thing. And I realize, like, a lot of my football and baseball buddies, they hate soccer. They hate everything. Like, I start talking to them about it, and they like hockey or they like horse. They like things. They just hate soccer. So that's a 50 plus American thing, right? I mean, that really is. I think all white people here, if you like baseball or football, you felt like it was your birthright to hate soccer for some reason, probably because guys had hair like this and tied it back. But that's the 70s and 80s, you know, and like all of that. World Cup, this jersey's almost 30 years old, man. We had a World Cup here in 94. I thought people, the general feeling would be like, this would be a really big deal. And I compared it to like the Keith Urban night that Angelo screwed up. But I'm trying to think of anything that would be on the par of having Brazil playing Korea here in a World Cup game 4.5 years from. It's not that far away. Like, so the whole part of it, like, do we have a chance? Now, the real soccer people have asked me, hey, Nasty, do we have a real chance? I mean, are they just blowing smoke? And I'm thinking to myself, well, Montreal's pulling out. Or they're pulling. Marty, I'm literally coming to you. And like, I have not done a lot of research on this, only enough to see who the other cities were. And I'm thinking to myself, scratching my head, thinking, are we getting jerked off? I mean, is this real? Or is this like, can this really happen? And why and how would that happen? Because it would make me very excited.
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I honestly think, look, just getting to this point is an accomplishment, as you said. Cities were either eliminated, past city, Charlotte, other places have been eliminated, or they walked away. We'll talk about that in a minute, why some cities might have walked away from the process. But just stepping back, so the United States is not unfamiliar territory to FIFA. We've hosted the World Cup three times, actually, 1994 for the men's, 1999 and 2003 for the women's. 1999, we all know about. 2003, we were a late substitute for China because they had an epidemic, a pandemic occur there at the time. And so the answer is yes, they definitely have a chance. We can talk a minute about what I think some of the challenges that they know full well are in terms of doing business and trying to convince FIFA and the United States Soccer Federation as a group and where those people reside. But let's just take a step back. When we hosted the World Cup in 1994 on the men's side, it was 32 teams, which means 64 matches spread around the United States. In 2026.
And Mexico and Canada were not involved in that bid.
They were not. Right? They were not. The only time that the World Cup has been co-hosted since it started in 1930 in Uruguay was in 2002 when South Korea and Japan co-hosted. And that was an experiment to try to bring some cross-border. There was longstanding animosity between Korea and Japan. And it had some moderate degrees of success, but there was not enough interest.
It was very successful for the U.S.
Model. Yeah, exactly.
We had a good time over there.
And so they've made a decision starting in 2026 to have a 48-team World Cup, right? We're going to add 16 more teams. So we moved to, from 64 matches, we moved to 80 matches total for the entire tournament. Now, as part of that combined bid, the U.S. is going to have 60 of those matches. Canada will have 10. Mexico will have 10. I think we pretty much know the five cities in Mexico and Canada that are going to end up hosting. So it comes down to selecting.
So they're all going to get games. I didn't realize that. So the Canada and Mexico will not get in the way of the U.S. bid at all.
No.
Mexico is going to get their 10 games, but they're going to do it at three sites, and Canada is going to get 10 games. Two. They're going to do it at two sites.
Yeah, they're going to be, I think, in Toronto and Edmonton is where they're going to end up. But the important thing is Canada and Mexico will get events up until the quarterfinals. So when you say, will it conflict with the U.S., it will in that regard because these will be early round matches. I don't know if they would be thinking of Baltimore for a quarterfinal match. But having said that, Mexico and Canada will get matches prior to the quarterfinals, so in the round robin, in the elimination knockout rounds, as they talk about that in the group stages, I mean, to do that. And so what that means is now there are 17 cities jockeying for basically, I think, 11 places. It could be 10 or 11, finally, when they decide in the United States. Now, let me read to you a few that I think are locked in. In fact, they've already said this. New York and New Jersey will MetLife Stadium will host the finals. Atlanta and Dallas in their stadiums will host the semifinals. So those three sites have been determined by U.S. Soccer. They've revealed that to FIFA. So now we're talking about.
But there's a couple of places for people that haven't seen. Like, I immediately thought any place with a Super Bowl, Phoenix, Minnesota, yeah. Chicago, you know, yeah. I thought of normal American places that we have Super Bowls. That that when I saw Edmonton on the Canadian thing, I'm like, this is a little different. You know, this is going to be a little different all the way around. But some of the typical American places aren't playing, right?
Right, right, right. And we'll talk about that as to why I think some of that is. So now, in addition to those three, New York, New Jersey, Dallas, and Atlanta, I think Los Angeles and Miami are virtual locks. So I think that's five that I would be comfortable saying. I think those are five locked in cities. So are we looking at five or six from a list that includes, I would say the biggest contenders directly for Baltimore would be Kansas City, Denver, Houston, Nashville, and Cincinnati. And then if you mix in the fact that DC, Washington, DC is competing, as is Philadelphia. So there's also what I call the Amtrak line, because every city, major city from Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and DC is in the running for this. And so that's where this falls. So I think that when we say, what is Baltimore's primary competition? I think it's going to come from those Denver, Houston, Nashville type cities. The thing that you would obviously notice right away, and we'll talk about the bid process that FIFA goes through, is that of all those cities that I've mentioned, every one of those cities I mentioned, Baltimore is the only one without a standing professional, top level professional soccer franchise, right? All those other cities we talked about, Kansas City, Denver, Houston, have, not only do they have a facility of more than 45,000, which will meet FIFA's criteria, is they have a top level, what we call Division One professional soccer.
The Ravens are kind of acting as that professional team in this way, right? Like the Ravens are the partner. It's not a soccer thing. I think maybe they're hoping the NFL plays into this a little bit, right?
Right. So that's a part of it, is the minimum requirement for hosting a World Cup is 45,000 seats in your stadium. It's a huge advantage to have 70,000. So now when you start to look at Baltimore as an individual, look, in terms of the FIFA criteria, 70% of FIFA's, they have a technical spec package, they have all these different ways to evaluate. 70% of that evaluation is in the technical specs, which includes stadium, team facilities, airports, transportation, a number of different things like that. The stadium alone is 35%, right? So M&T Stadium, with its recent $140, $150 million worth of upgrades, provided some by the Ravens, some by the state, is a huge advantage because it will truly be state of the art. There's video screens, there's all sorts of training facilities, all those things, escalators, all those different things. So M&T Stadium will raise the bar quite well, I think, for the Baltimore bid. Now
I like the way you're talking, Marty. You know I want this bid, right? I
mean, yeah, no, I know you want it.
I mean, people ask me about this. In 2006, I went over to Germany. I saw these cities. I remember coming to you 10 years ago and saying, if we put a television in the middle of a harbor, this city could really take on a month-long festivity. I just don't think people understand. If we get a yes, if somehow Terry and Dick Cass and Boyd Ruther, they pull this off and it happens here, this will be one of the most amazing things ever happened to Baltimore, certainly from a sports perspective. I don't think people understand what they're getting here.
Yeah. No, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. The amount of time, effort, again, whether you're talking about one match or five matches, whatever that circulation is, the amount of time, effort, and dedication and commitment that go into even getting one, let alone multiple, is remarkable. So as I said, 70% of that is on that sort of top line, the things that you can see, infrastructure, hospitality, different things like that. The 30% area, I think, is one to look at, because 30% of that goes into, number one, the cost of hosting the World Cup. But then the other two line items are in media and marketing and tickets and hospitality. And here's where I want to take you to what I think is a key point, which is when what they call the united bid between U.S., Canada, and Mexico won this ultimately to host over Morocco, was the other finalist. The scoring tells it all, because the ultimate outcome financially from hosting the World Cup in Morocco was estimated to be between $7 to $8 billion. In the United States, that is double. It's estimated between $14 to $15 billion is what FIFA thinks they can yield from hosting a World Cup in the United States. So for a $2 billion cost, which is what they estimate, they think that return will be somewhere between top line revenues of $14 and $15 billion. So here's the question. How much money can be pushed across the table, not only for, you know, you can have great facilities and great transportation, lots of these other things. How much other money from ticket revenues, hospitality money, things. So now where did some of these other cities and organizations drop out? One of the things that FIFA requires is a long list of tax exemptions, right? And that is on hospital rooms, tickets,
they keep all the money,
all these areas. So in other words, it's a tax abatement, right? They're not going to be taxed on that. So whatever 3, 4, 5, 7% that the city, state, et cetera, would be taking in, FIFA, when you sign on the dotted line, you're saying you are providing tax exemptions for them. So when Chicago or Minneapolis or some of these other cities have dropped out, it's part and partial because they didn't want to sign up to that, because FIFA does their organizing differently than the IOC. In terms of the Olympics, they award the games to, you know, the United States for Los Angeles, let's say, and then they allow them to create what's called an organizing committee. And that organizing committee sells tickets and does things. The IOC makes contributions to that organizing committee, but they run it.
That's the Peter Uberoff method, right?
Yeah. FIFA does it differently. FIFA gets in business with that host federation. So they come in with the United States Soccer Federation and they do a joint venture. They basically take responsibility for running this entire event. They don't just say, okay, you have a local host committee, you guys take it over and run it. So they come in, they provide some staff along the way. They do that because they're looking for that yield, that $2 billion investment that they're willing to make versus the $14, $15, $16 billion in revenues that they hope to take in. And so I think that's the challenge for Baltimore or anybody in that thing is how much better are you at raising revenues in Cincinnati? How much better are you raising revenues in Kansas City?
Raising revenues in what way? What would local revenue be?
Well, guaranteeing tickets. So for example, the bid book for M&T is $70,900, right? That's a little bit more than some other places. How much are you going to charge for tickets in Baltimore, right? They have a great track record. They've actually sold out for Gold Cups. They've sold out for the Chelsea AC Milan match.
That was one of the most amazing nights ever. And it was just was the energy in the city that night. Did you go to that game?
I did, yeah.
Ronaldinho, the whole deal. Yeah. I mean, that was an amazing night for Baltimore.
I would tell you, even from my experience, at the Gold Cup, the last time the Gold Cup was in, they had a doubleheader where the United States, I forget who they played first, Panama, doesn't matter. The next game was between Honduras and El Salvador. That place was crazy. And so you would have thought you were in the Honduran capital. Maybe they played Guatemala. I forget who they – but it was clearly a border rivalry that was played in the second game. That's really the experience of the World Cup. It's not so much how many Americans will pile in, because they will, but bringing nationals out of places like D.C., Philadelphia, other places like that who follow – their national team in ways that it's hard to explain for Americans. And so
well, if Mexico played a game here, right? If Mexico played a game here, it would be insane.
Yeah. Mexico plays, actually, they bring many of their friendly games, other things. They actually host them in the United States in places like Houston or San Diego or Phoenix, places like that, Atlanta, because they can actually make more money in those stadiums and facilities than they can hosting the game in Mexico City all the time. So that's an important part of it. So as I said, look, FIFA
just like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers can make more money playing in Jacksonville can make more money playing in Wembley, right?
Yeah.
Literally.
So FIFA looks at this as from a technical standpoint, technical specs, that's an important part of the bid. And then the risk assessment. If we go there, Baltimore, versus someplace else, what is our risk? You know, how likely are we to get to our goal based on that? And everything about that gets scored. It's all published. It all becomes available later as an understanding. Now, here's the last thing, and then we can engage in other parts if you want. I think, although it's nothing formal, I suspect that they're already starting to have conversations where they might, after the initial site visits, which are in the third quarter, July, August, early September, the decision comes out in October, November, December, fourth quarter, is I think after the initial site visits, I could see a scenario where U.S. Soccer and FIFA may try to push some people together. I don't think they would want to necessarily award Washington and not Baltimore. If they could figure out a way to perhaps even joint together some of that, because like I said, on that Amtrak train, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, DC, those five areas, not all five of those are not going to get matches. I think that's pretty obvious of what the remaining distribution
is. And New York's in.
And New York's in. So does Baltimore and DC form some sort of coalition?
This sounds like the same thing about getting an expansion team. The same conversation I was having 30 years ago, like Washington's there, Philadelphia's here. Why would they pick us? Right?
Yeah. The areas that US soccer and FIFA like to have is like, we know where the finals and semifinals are, but a big question is, where's the opening match going to be? Because the host team plays in that opening match. You'd want that match, frankly, to be in DC, right? The nation's capital, if you could. Now, maybe they say LA or someplace else, but there are big moments, the final, the semifinals, and then the opening match. That's where all the pageantry is. So, again, this isn't something that I think they're willing to talk about right now, but I think down the line, there could be some. The last thing is not just hosting matches, but with 48 teams coming in, you've got to have training facilities for all of those teams.
That's the one thing I've tried to explain to people, that like, even if we lose, this is sort of the booby prize, would be that the French team trains here and there's 8,000 French fans that decide they want to stay in Baltimore because they're playing games in Washington and Boston and Kansas City or whatever, right?
So let me give you an example. In Brazil for the World Cup, the last time it was there, the Germans take this so seriously that they don't go into Brazil and say, can we use this or that? They don't want the English, they don't want the Italians, excuse me, anywhere near them. So they actually went in and they built their own facility. They spent the money, built their own training facility. And when they were done, they said, it's yours, all for you. So we're not talking about just training at UMBC or training at Towson or Johns Hopkins or College Park. We're talking about investments quite likely from countries like Germany, from Italy, maybe England, that really invest in those facilities because they have to be at a certain level. Because like you said, they're expecting to be in country for 3 to 4 weeks. And so where's their home base going to be? So it's possible for many other things in addition to a match to do that. So I think I think this shines up Baltimore quite well with U.S. soccer for even some preseason for the U.S. national team to come in and maybe do games in advance of the World Cup, all sorts of different things, all predicated on how well it shows out in July, August, and September. So back to your original question, do I think they have a chance? I think they have an absolute chance, whether it's landing matches, whether it's landing training, whether it's giving U.S. soccer an opportunity for future matches or other types of things.
They're in on a taste of something, right? Like that's making it this far and investing this much and putting this much into it. They're hoping to get something, even if it's not five games, right?
So the last time we awarded the Olympics in 2017, there were only two bidders remaining, Paris and Los Angeles. And the IOC decided, you know what? Unprecedented. We're going to award both of these. We're going to award Paris in 24 and LA in 28. Why? They didn't want to send people away after investing, in that case, millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars with nothing. And so I don't think FIFA or U.S. soccer will really enjoy sending five or six or seven cities away, frankly, with nothing. I think they're looking to build fan engagement for the World Cup in a market they recognize needs more. We need to get more from the United States in terms of World Cup beyond just Fox spending media money. And so I think all those things go into the pot, which I think makes it very interesting for folks in the Baltimore and surrounding area to watch how this develops over the next couple of months.
Marty Conway is here. He's the good professor and, of course, longtime executive with the Baltimore Orioles, Major League Baseball, now teaching at Georgetown. You could follow him, and the smart people do, at Marty Conway on LinkedIn as well as out on Twitter. So they have a chance. Let's go back to the beginning. The first premise was this would be like the biggest thing ever. Now, obviously, getting a baseball team, getting a football team, building a stadium. This is a lot bigger than a Jay-Z concert or even a Garth Brooks show or Billy Joel concert or I don't know. I mean, if we got the Super Bowl, which we're never getting, right? I mean, I compared it to the thing we never had with Keith Urban afterward from an event standpoint, but that's one night for local fans. This would literally, if done right, make the city vibrant for a month, right? Like it would be 3 weeks to a month of lots and lots of people in, lots of hotels, lots of restaurants, lots of transportation. We would be a Super Bowl city for a month. Like I don't know what to compare that to other than being a Super Bowl city, which you're only for a couple of days. And the dirty little secret is everybody comes in on Friday, leaves on Sunday. They don't ask Jacksonville, ask Detroit. They don't leave behind the kind of money. It's all a big lie. I don't think the World Cup's a lie, Marty. I think it's like the sort of the real thing. I don't know what it's going to do in Qatar next year. And I know you have connections there and, you know, have been an advisor and what they're expecting there. That's not here though. If this place did it right over 5 years, the way Americans know how to do sport, and rolling out a red carpet, you know what a Kentucky Derby weekend looks like. This is that for a month. I mean, I don't know what second place is. I don't know what else you could get, what else our city could get. Cause we ain't get an NBA team or anything. I mean, none of that's happening. What else in our lifetime could we do as a sports thing that would be on par with this? I say nothing. I say it's that big a deal. And to think that I got a smart guy like you here saying, well, yeah, stadium's big and it is on 95 and the NFL's behind it. And, you know, I mean, the stadium's big. I mean, you're giving me some reasons to believe, which is kind of dangerous.
Well, look, it's on a different level. Let's be sure about that. The Olympics, if you can't get the Olympics or a Formula One race, the World Cup is in that trinity. Because here's what happens. They have such a global audience. You can imagine if Baltimore were awarded or even a training facility or get matches, whatever it is, you're talking about people in Asia and Europe and Africa. Who knows where what games or matches are going to be assigned here. And so the one thing that I know from all of our studies at Georgetown, when we study global events, you know, you can debate tourism, you can debate some other things, and economists are happy to do that, and I support what they do. But the one area that always stands out and always does is international trade. It always improves from hosting an Olympics, hosting a World Cup. It doesn't matter whether you're South Africa or Germany, wherever. The amount of relationships in international trade almost always show growth after the event compared to before. So in terms of port, exposing all these different things that Baltimore has that are right over your shoulder that you can see. And so, again, it's in a league of its own. If you can't have an Olympic summer, winter, or you can't have a World Cup, I mean, a Formula One race, a World Cup brings the audience globally. And that's what the experience in Qatar is, that it's shining a light on everything, on your culture, on your economics, on your population, on your government, all these areas. Because it brings, like I said, it's almost like a UFO level light that shines down, not just for the matches themselves, but in the lead up to that. And that's something that you just can't buy. I mean, that kind of publicity and exposure is just invaluable to a city and a region like Baltimore and Maryland.
Does it help to say we had a failed Grand Prix? I mean, you mentioned Formula One. I thought, I remember my view from up here, and I remember pimping it. I remember never getting paid. I remember telling everybody how great it was going to be. It was going to be worth it, worth it, worth it. Yeah. It wasn't worth it. It didn't do well. No one came. No one came. No one came. Like, yeah, whatever they told you, they lied. They lied about the first one, and the second one they couldn't lie, and then it goes away. I don't know that it does harm or good, but it shows we could put on an event. I mean, they did put it on.
Yeah.
Flawlessly.
Yeah, well, the issue there was the facility itself, the physical plant. You know, running around, it's a great idea to run around the warehouse and all that, but those facilities, just those roads and all that, just weren't up for it. And then there was a lot of other issues behind the scenes. Here, one of the things that the advantages that the United States has in these kind of big event bids is we don't have to build any facilities. They're already there. The one difference, when I looked at the difference between the U.S. and Morocco in the final evaluation, is FIFA ranks the risk of low, medium, and high. And in the infrastructure and facilities ranking, Morocco had all red, all high. The United States had all yellow, low, because there's literally no risk. Like I said, most of this falls within that 30% of media marketing, hospitality, being able to generate revenues, merchandise, all kinds of things to do that. And so that's where Baltimore in the local, you know, I think they're going to spend anywhere between $500,000 and $750,000 in order to dress up the city and be ready for when this FIFA group comes through in the third quarter. So I think you're going to see this dress rehearsal. But the question is, how much how much will that investment reap coming back? And I think that's part of the evaluation again, versus these other cities like Kansas City, Denver, Houston, Nashville, places like that. That's where the advanced decline line, I think, is going to rest.
All the Mr. Bigs come in from Switzerland, huh?
Yeah. And then you have to go back and do that marketing, not just while they're here, but you have to be prepared to go back to these localities where they come from and reinforce that with some sort of events, maybe some sort of personalities, people that will speak to Baltimore's candidacy, things like that. Because when they leave and go back and they go on to their next set of cities, you can't suddenly be out of sight, out of mind. And so not only is it domestic, but there's going to have to be some international exposure, which I think they're prepared to do. The question is, you know, how much money can they raise to be able to do that?
If they need somebody to talk Baltimore, I'll be happy to shave and cut my hair, come down and do it. Marty Conway's here. He is a good professor at Georgetown, talking all things soccer. You know, it came to me last week, and I went to this press conference, and it's the worst kind of press conference. I left knowing no more than when I showed up. And all I kept thinking is, all right, what's the real truth here? What's the real game here? And I think I wasn't far off in saying, well, even if you lose, you'll win something, and you'll be involved in something, and you'll be a player with U.S. soccer. And it is kind of weird we don't have a team. I mean, beyond all of that, and there's no sort of horizon for that at all, right? Underneath all of this, there's no MLS team coming to Baltimore.
Yeah, and that's what I said, which I think bodes well for being in this group of 17. Again, some of those other cities, Minneapolis, Charlotte, Chicago, that either were eliminated or stepped away, they have professional soccer. So a lot of that hinges on the friendly matches, hosting Gold Cups, you know, so U.S. soccer has some familiarity with Baltimore, M&T Stadium, the proximity. I'm sure they love the proximity of hospitality, hotels, the airport, all those types of things. It makes for a really great sort of setup. And I think that's what they'll continue to hang their hat on. The next question is, how much in the community will this look like when you're facing places like Nashville or other places that have recent success with new soccer teams? What does that look like when that committee comes in to a market that doesn't have an existing soccer franchise? You know, how do they go about that? So I'm quite sure they know that's where their big challenges are, and I'm sure they have some plans to overcome that.
Yeah, no murders, no trouble, no fires, no, you know, crazy stuff when the Mr. Bigs are in town. You know, it is kind of weird. They land at the airport. Yeah, I've read all about all of the, you know, they're all going to be put up over at the Four Seasons. Like, and everywhere they go, they get this royal treatment. And then they all go back and decide, Cincinnati, you are the king. Yeah. Pretty much the way it works, right?
Yeah. No, look, so it's a good exercise. And I think they have, like I said, getting to 17 without having a major professional franchise indicates that there were many other parts of their bid that the committees feel strongly about. So, you know, you build on that, you build off your strengths, and you try to acknowledge and overcome some of your weaknesses. But I think that's the big picture. And like you said, the decision comes down at the end of this year, and then it's another 4 years until we actually have matches or whatever is going to be here. So could be an interesting period, certainly for the economy and for the opportunities here in Baltimore. So, but we'll see. I think some of that decision between Philadelphia, Baltimore, DC will also get solidified because, like I said, all those five cities, including New York, we already know New York's getting them. How many of those other four are going to be on the list finally? I think that's, again, there's great facilities here, great opportunity, but there's a cluster that FIFA will look at and try to decide how best to, I guess, exploit that.
We got an NFL team against all odds. You got Camden Yards built. We've had other miracles here, Marty, you know?
That's right. That's right.
That would be a big night, you and I. In the meantime, I hope to see you with Shohei Ohtani on the 24th, the other modern miracle. Then we get football season. We get back to like regular sports again. No play.
People
none
in the
of that
stands,
happening.
Right?
People in fans the stands. There. I'm going to shave. We're going to figure it all out. Marty, I appreciate you, man. I was thinking about you as I was melting the other day. I'm thinking, I'll call Marty. He'll have answers for me. And I'm going to be calling more people to get answers too, because this is a big deal. This isn't something the city should be quiet about or anybody that should be quiet about. And it's something I think they owe it to the public to explain what the odds are. Because right out of the gate, people are, we ain't getting no World Cup here, you know. And I'm thinking, Well, I don't know. It's starting to feel late early, you know, and I'm thinking we're still in. So I will get everybody acting right when these guys find out when these guys are coming in, and I'll put the word out that we need to behave right as a community when they're here.
That'll be interesting when there is an announcement that they're coming and how the city reacts and you write all that. So
I hope the humidity's low that day.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they'll be in Qatar next year. They'll have no problem with that. Marty, take care of yourself.
Okay, bud. Thank you.
All right. There he goes. Marty Conway. He is the good professor at Georgetown. And of course, you can find him out on LinkedIn, on Twitter. Intelligent folks follow him at Marty Conway. It's Chicken Palooza right now, all month long, all next month long. My crab cake tour goes into that. We'll be gassing up at Royal Farms. And also want to thank our friends at Wise Markets, not only for introducing me to T-Berry ice cream last week, but for giving me this new mug that keeps my drinks icy, icy cold on these hot days of summer. I am Nestor. We are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.